For those who are visiting with us tonight, and for those who are joining us by radio, we invite you to turn with us in your copy of the Scriptures to the third chapter of the prophecy of Isaiah. And for tonight's study, we're considering together verses 16 down through the first verse of the fourth chapter of the prophecy of Isaiah. Let me remind you of the context of this passage before I read it. We're studying in this particular part of the chapter, on through chapter 5, one prophetic message by the prophet, in which he contrasts the Jerusalem that shall be in God's future with the Jerusalem that is in his day. And he is counting out the reasons God is about to destroy Jerusalem in terrible judgment. Tonight we come to a rather sobering part of the chapter, beginning with verse 16 of chapter 3. Moreover, the Lord saith, because the daughters of Zion are haughty, and walked with stretched forth necks, and wanton eyes, walking and mincing as they go, and making a tinkling with their feet. Therefore, the Lord will smite with a scab the crown of the head of the daughters of Zion, and the Lord will discover their secret parts. In that day the Lord will take away the bravery of their tinkling ornaments about their feet, their cauls and their round tires like the moon, the chains, the bracelets, the mufflers, the bonnets, the ornaments of the legs, the headbands, the tablets, the earrings, the rings, the nose jewels, the changeable suits of apparel, the mantles, the wimples, the crisping pins, the glasses, the fine linen, the hoods, and the veils. And it shall come to pass that instead of sweet smell, there shall be a stink. And instead of a girdle, a rent. And instead of well-set hair, baldness. And instead of a stomacher, a girding of sackcloth. And burning instead of beauty. Thy men shall fall by the sword, and thy mighty in the war. And her gates shall lament and mourn, and she being desolate shall sit upon the ground. And in that day seven women shall take hold of one man, saying, we will eat our own bread and wear our own apparel. Only let us be called by thy name, to take away our reproach. You've heard the old saying, the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. That saying is held suspect in our world today. Not many would agree with the statement. They suggest that that places too much responsibility upon womanhood, that it's a heavy load, too heavy for her to bear. The prophet Isaiah, along with Jeremiah and Amos, who lived in the 8th century before Christ, were all agreed that the women of Israel and the women of Judah bore a heavy responsibility for the fall of the nation. Twice in his prophecy, Isaiah singles out the women of Zion and speaks some rather stern and searching and judgmental words. Amos has those famous addresses to the fat cows of Bashan, to the fat ladies of that day. Jeremiah, in the close of his prophecy, singles out the women for a special responsibility for what happened to Judah. It is a biblical principle that a nation never falls until her women fall. I want us to discuss this passage tonight in light of this truth. First, we need to make sure we understand who is addressed in the passage. In verse 16 it says, "Moreover, the Lord says, because the daughters of Zion are haughty." Who does He have in view as the daughters of Zion? They were probably the first ladies. Wives of the political and religious and commercial leaders and civic leaders of the community. They were the ladies who were envied by all of the other ladies in Judah. The daughters of Jerusalem, the daughters of Zion, the outstanding, the first ladies of the community. What is the accusation lodged against them? They are haughty. It's a word that suggests they are proud. They are puffed up with a sinful, selfish sense of importance. The basic accusation, the basic sign of the fall of the women of Judah was their haughtiness. That attitude that they reflected and took toward those about them, especially other women and men. And the prophet says, this is the charge against them. Because the daughters of Zion are haughty, therefore, verse 17, judgment is about to come. Without suggesting that there is an exact parallel between what is said of the daughters of Jerusalem, the daughters of Zion in the 8th century before Christ, and the daughters of America in 1976. Without suggesting that, let's take this passage and make sure we understand what it says. Because surely no God-fearing woman would ever want to make a contribution to the downfall of our country and the failure of God's purpose as it relates to our country. What does He say about these haughty women? I want us to look first at the manifestations of this haughtiness so we can better understand exactly what He's talking about. Beginning with verse 16, He begins to expand on this attitude as it expressed itself in the life of the women. Pride manifests itself differently in men and in women. Proud men, according to the prophet back in the second chapter, build their skyscrapers, build their great towers, and ignore that there is God and build their substitutes for God all around them. See, men build cities and shopping centers and banks. Men build great monuments and institutions to express their pride. But women, with them it's a little different, the prophet says. He says, the haughty daughters of Zion walk with stretched forth necks. Do you ever observe people when they walk? There's a science of body language today. And how people walk speaks. The prophet Isaiah had been a girl watcher for a while, at any rate. And he said, I've noticed these daughters of Zion as they walk through the streets, that they walk with stretched forth necks. Now, he doesn't mean that they walk with some uncomfortable kind of posture or stretching forth their necks. It's rather a way of saying they walk in such a manner that they suggest they want everybody to watch them as they walk. It was the kind of walk that was designed to attract attention. That's what he's saying. They walk with stretched forth necks and wanton eyes. Roving eyes. The idea is that, and women have a way of speaking volumes with their eyes. He says these women of Zion, they walk in such a way that it's designed to attract the attention of others. And as they walk, they use their eyes to convey to men especially, look at me. And they seek to make themselves an object of men's study and interest. And he adds, walking and mincing as they go. Do you have an imagination? You can see them. Again, it is a walk designed to attract attention. They want others to see them. They think they are so valuable, so precious, so beautiful, so attractive, that they want the whole world to have the pleasure of looking upon them. So they walk with a step, they walk with a mincing step that is designed to convey a message. Look at me. Making a tinkling with their feet in case somebody missed how they walked, missed the look in their eye, they put bells on their ankles so there'd be a tinkling as they went. They had ankle bells and they sounded out the noise. Look here, I'm walking by. Watch me as I go. You see, women's pride has a way of expressing itself in their behavior. Their behavior toward other women, their behavior toward men, and ultimately their behavior toward God. But the prophet goes on, and in a backward kind of way, beginning with verse 18, he tells us that their pride also expresses itself, this haughtiness expresses itself in their dress. Beginning with verse 18, there are, I believe, if I counted correctly, 24 separate items of women's dress in that Old Testament day. Now, I suggested a moment ago, Isaiah was an observant man. Of course, you will recall, he was married, and he had two sons. So he had opportunity to know firsthand something about the kind of paraphernalia that a woman used to accent human beauty in that day. I don't think there'd be much profit in me going through and explaining all of these ornaments of beauty that women used in that day. But would you let me read it to you from a more modern translation, the New International Version, that some of the words might be brought into more contemporary setting. He says, in that day the Lord will snatch away their finery. The King James uses the word bravery. It means their beauty, their finery. And then he begins to make his list of the finery of these haughty women. Listen to it. The bangles and the headbands. The crescent necklaces, that is, moon necklaces. The earrings, the bracelets, the veils, the headdresses. The ankle chains, the sashes, the perfume bottles and charms, the signet rings and nose rings, the fine robes and capes and cloaks and purses, the mirrors and linen garments and tiaras and shawls. With the exception of nose rings, I think most of those are still in use. In fact, it's amazing how little improvement women have made in the things they use. There is only one thing I could find in that list that the women in the 8th century before Christ didn't have. And that was shoes. I don't know how in the world those women dressed up without a new pair of shoes. Now, how are we to understand such a list and such a, a judgmental word against these daughters of Zion, 8th century before Christ, in the use of all of this long list of things, is the prophet Isaiah condemning the use of jewelry? Well, if he condemns the use of jewelry, he also condemns the use of apparel. Obviously, he does not make that kind of condemnation. It's not that the things he lists are in themselves and of themselves evil. The prophet is saying that female haughtiness expresses itself in the wrong use. It expresses itself in wrong priorities concerning beauty. For female haughtiness has a way of making the first thing in life appearing physically beautiful. Outwardly beautiful. When God would place priority upon being first inwardly beautiful, having beauty of spirit. Female haughtiness, female pride would place the emphasis upon the hair and the dress and the jewelry and the perfumes and the different kinds of beauty aids. When God would place the emphasis upon meekness and quietness and patience and love and faith and understanding and inner attitudes that express the right kind of character. But in Jerusalem, in the 8th century before Christ, among the daughters of Zion, their concern was, how does my hair look? Their concern was, is my dress in style? Their concern was, how do you like this fragrance? Their concern was, does this necklace go with this dress? Their concern was, do you know how much this bracelet cost? Their concern was, do you know how much this ankle bracelet cost? And that was the emphasis of the women. And the prophet Isaiah says, it is the sign of the moral degeneration and spiritual destitution of the women, and the land is ready for judgment. Are you men intimidated by the women? Why are you being so quiet? That's the manifestation. Sensual, frivolous women produce a sensual, frivolous nation. The second thing. Let me talk for a moment about the seriousness of this haughtiness. Why is it so serious? The serious note grows out to the place of the unique role that women play in society. Isaiah, Amos, and Jeremiah knew this. Women are placed in the human family to be something of the conscience of the human family and the conscience of the nation. It is the women whose attitudes, whose convictions will in the end determine the moral conduct of a society. And when it became evident that the women in Jerusalem in the 8th century before Christ had become sensual and frivolous and caught up in the temporal things of life, materialistically in their orientation, when this became clear, the prophets knew and understood the handwriting on the wall, judgment from God is next. Because it meant that the moral conscience of the nation was corrupted and dead.
Now, I'm going to say something that some of you women won't agree with, but I say it because I believe it to be true. In our culture today, there's a lot of people priding themselves that at last, in our country, we have destroyed the double standard. There was a time when it was all right for men to have affairs, but it was considered an unpardonable sin for a woman to be immoral. And there are those who are priding themselves that our generation has been the generation that destroyed the double standard. The double standard needed to be destroyed, but we destroyed the wrong side of it. For you see, women concluded that men will never come up to our standard, so we will abandon ours and join theirs. And one of the greatest indictments against the present situation, our present culture, is that more and more women are becoming identified with the immoral revolution that is sweeping our land. It was bad enough when you had Hugh Hefner and Playboy and some men leading a sexual revolution. That was bad enough, but you could have expected that from men. They've always been corrupt. It didn't mean too much in the nation, though. But when you had women's magazines coming to this marketplace, offering the same kind of immoral trash to the American public, and making money in the same way, and suggesting that the whole society needs to adopt the same kind of standard, the handwriting is on the wall, my friend. Because it's a sign that the infection of sin has touched the moral heart of the nation. It's womanhood. You say, but Brother Lowry, that's too heavy a responsibility to put on women. Men ought to be moral and upright and straight and correct and have integrity without women forcing them to do that. But from the beginning, it has been so that God has placed womanhood and the responsibility of something of the moral consciousness, the moral conscience of the culture. For God put in woman more sensitivity to evil and wrong than he did man. He gave to woman something of a finer, more sensitive nature than he did man. But when she loses that, the nation's gone. There's no hope. When she loses that, that's the reason there's this stern, heartbreaking word from the prophet to the daughters of Zion. They've left their high road and responsibility and have got caught up in the attitudes of the world about them, to the ruin of the nation. The third word. This text has, really the heart of the text, is not about the haughtiness itself, but about what results from the haughtiness. The judgment. The judgment is to be the great reversal. It's to be an experience, and he talks about the judgment from the perspective of a woman. The background is that of war. Most of the women in this room, your only touch with war has been at quite a distance. Some of you lost sons, maybe some lost husbands in war. But there's a difference in losing a son and losing a husband and being in a country that is conquered in war. There's a lot of difference. Well, it's pain, it's agony, it's hell to lose a husband, to lose a loved one in war. but it's hell 1,000 times over for womanhood when her nation is trampled underfoot in war. And that's the background in which the prophet speaks. For the Assyrians are going to come to Jerusalem, and when they march through Jerusalem, the ones to suffer most will be the women. The men will die. But those who die are the most fortunate. It's those who live who know the horror. And he describes it. It's the great reversal in which women lose everything that they prize. The material things, the beautiful things, the valuable things that they have held to, the things they put first, suddenly they're gone. And he describes it so graphically in the passage. Let me call your attention to just some of them. For instance, in that 17th verse, therefore the Lord will smite with a scab the crown of the head of the daughters of Zion. Oh, Isaiah, the Lord, through Isaiah, is so discerning of womanhood. There's not a woman in this house but what her spirits can be lifted by a visit to the beauty shop. My wife can be half dead. Send her to the beauty shop and she comes back home like a resurrection's taking place. And I'm not talking about what happens to her hair. I'm talking about what it does to her. And Isaiah said, you women of Israel, you're so priding yourself in your well-fixed hair. But in the day of judgment, your head's going to be covered with a scab and the result will be baldness. Now, bald-headed men are bad. But did you ever see a bald-headed woman? See, the thing she most prized, the thing she was the proudest of, the thing she used to reveal her own sense of worth, gone! Instead, she has a scab and baldness on her head. And he says, and the Lord will discover their secret parts. There's some debate about the translation of this. The King James translators understood. You see, she so wanted men to look at her, to watch her. She walked in a manner to attract the attention of men. She looked with her eyes in a way to attract the attention of men. It's as though God says in sarcasm, you want the attention of men, you get it. I'll see that you're stripped naked and be made to walk naked before the eyes of men. Those of you who are tempted to immodest dress need to remember that that's God's ultimate judgment upon the immodest dressed. To me, one of the most frightening moments in that film about Corrie Ten Boom's life, and I never shall forget it when I read it in the book, how when she, godly, sensitive soul that she was, and her companions in prison were made to strip and walk naked before the eyes of her German captors and prison keepers. I can think of nothing more repulsive to a sensitive soul. And the prophet saying to the women of Jerusalem, you be sure you really want men to look at you. Because when the Assyrians come, you'll be exposed. It's one of the horrors of war when a nation is captured. And he goes on in that verse 18, he's talking about they're going to lose their, the King James says, their bravery. New International says their finery. The idea is their beauty aids. They're going to lose all of them. In fact, he goes down to verse 24 and the little word instead is the key word in verse 24. Listen to it. And it shall come to pass that instead of sweet smell, there shall be stink. Repulsive stench. You're so careful about your body deodorants and your perfumes, the prophet says. But in that day you'll smell as those who had to go without baths, those who've had to go without any bodily care, those who've been bottled, bunched up like animals. And you're going to have a stench, even the stench of death. And instead of a girdle, now remember, a girdle in that day was an outward thing, a thing of beauty, worn to hold the flowing garments together. Instead of that, he said, there will be a rope. King James has the word red. It's the word rope. He means you're going to be tied with a rope and led like cattle as prisoners by your captors wherever they please. And instead of well-set hair, baldness. And instead of a beautiful garment of stomacher, a girding of sackcloth, your beautiful garments of beautiful colors will be replaced by sackcloth, the filthy garments that express mourning. And instead of beauty, so worried about your complexion, instead of that burning, the word has in it the idea of branding. You've been so concerned about your complexion, the prophet says, in that day your captors are going to brand you. Branding like cattle. And thy men shall fall by the sword. And he said, you've been so concerned about men. In that day there's going to be the great reversal. So many of you men are going to be killed that seven women will go chasing after one man. Not a man chasing you. You're going to go chasing one man, seven of you, grabbing hold of his garments and saying to him, sir, if you'll just let us be your wife, why, we'll work and make our own living. We'll provide everything we need. All we want is your name so we can get rid of the disgrace that's been brought upon us. That's verse 1 of chapter 4. Nothing more humiliating than a woman having to get out and walk the streets looking for a man with whom she can identify. She has to support herself. War. See, war is to take so many of the men. The ratio will be 7-1, the prophet says. If there's a group in the heart of our nation that ought to be concerned more than anybody else about the welfare of the nation, it ought to be the women of the nation. For when a nation falls, the women suffer the most. Their husbands die. Their fathers die. Their brothers die. Their companions die. And they become captive. And they become the ravishes. They become the objects of the scorn and the lust of their captors. And the prophet says, oh, daughters of Zion, this is where your haughtiness leads. Well, I said I didn't want to make an exact parallel, and I'm not suggesting tonight necessarily that we're exactly where they were. But I must confess to you that I see enough parallel that it causes deep, deep, deep concern in my heart. I do not sense that womanhood in America is first concerned about inward beauty and a walk with God. I do not even sense that often enough among those who are church women. I really feel too often that we, the women of the church, are too infected by the sensuality and by the spirit of the age. We're so afraid we're going to be out of style. So afraid some woman's going to outdress us. So afraid our hair's not going to look just right. We're so afraid we'll lose men's approval. When the primary concern of a godly woman ought to be that she not lose God's approval. And I say it with all of my heart tonight, that when America falls, it will be because the womanhood of America succumbed to the spirit of the age and lost her place that God gave her in our culture as the moral conscience to keep this nation turned Godward. Because whether you believe it, whether the sociologists believe it, whether anybody believes it, the hand that rocks the cradle does ultimately
rule the world. Because children are most deeply affected by what their mothers are. Frivolous, sensual women produce a frivolous, sensual age. Let's pray together. Father, I stand before you tonight to confess, even as I've read the words of the prophet about the women, I'm mindful that he's spoken about the men and especially about the spiritual leaders. But I pray, Lord, during this bicentennial year in America, that we'd have the kind of moral and spiritual renewal in our nation that would bring about a new day of hope, of national expectation and hope. We need it so desperately, Father. And I pray for the women of North Fort Worth Baptist Church and for the women who've listened by radio tonight. I pray, Father, that the impact of the message of Isaiah would bring about a new sensitivity to sin and evil, a new brokenness and humility before you. May all pride and haughtiness be replaced by humility and trust and an humble walk with the Lord our God. Now, Father, those who are in this service who need to make public decisions for Christ, we ask you to help them as they come. And grant, Lord, that their decisions would be such that it'll make a difference in their lives, in the church, and in the world, to the glory of Christ. It's in his name that we pray. Amen.